Great. So we've got California, which is really nice weather, and Mississippi, which is probably here like North Carolina, hot and sticky, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's something else.
And Iowa, count that one in too. We're hot
You
and sticky too.
hot? Oh, we're about 100, you know, here, 100 degrees. It's
Well, we're in the
unbelievable.
90s with heat indices right now in the
Wow.
hundreds, but
Wow.
last week we had temps in the hundreds too.
Now, how is it out
Welcome to
there?
my world.
What?
Welcome to my world. We cool
Oh,
off in about February.
yeah.
By February, we'll have 10 feet of snow.
So
The only thing white around here are the beaches. I
we
think
could
I'd like that better than snow. I don't know.
Did someone just join?
Yes, this is Harry in Columbus, Ohio.
Harry, okay, good to see you, Columbus.
Yes, it's
And
good to
you're
be back.
having Glo's weather. She's in Iowa, hot and sticky.
Oh.
Now, we don't want to hear, but tell us how it is in California.
Well, we
Nice, huh?
are hot, not sticky, but we're in the mid-90s and it's sunny and with a light breeze.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Can't complain, not
No.
yet anyway.
No. Well, we can't think of anything bad that's going to happen out there other than, well, global warming will probably hurt you least on top of it there. So
Yeah,
you
I
all will
guess we
work it.
just get the smog from across the ocean
There
from
you go. We're going to be talking today about curriculum issues, but before we get started, Glo wants to talk about the workshops that we have every year in Alexandria. These are great workshops for people who are interested in job training programs. Who just joined?
This is Tim at St. Louis Community College.
Excuse me again?
This is Tim at St. Louis Community College.
Oh, hey, Tim, how are you?
Good, how are you doing, Mike?
Good, good. Tim is another of our grantees, and we're looking forward to Tim, are you coming out to Alexandria in August?
Well, hopefully, as long as we don't have any budget issues.
Yes.
He's registered, I can put it that way.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm registered, but Ina told me that if there's budget problems in D.C., we may all have some issues.
Yeah, isn't that something? You know, I mean, before we get started, it's interesting that the Brownfields program this year just doubled, you know, which is interesting that job training, environmental job training doubled. And this is in a time when, you know, EPA is facing a 20% cutback under ideal circumstances. So it's a very interesting program. And one of the explanations is that there are other media, and it's going to flow into what we're going to talk about today, but it's because other media, they're expanding the program from strictly brownfields to environmental job training. So it's incorporating the other offices first within OSWER and hopefully within the entire agency, all of environmental training, which will be good even if there are budget cuts. Conceivably, some of these other program offices might pitch in to keep the program expanding, hopefully. Glo, do you want to give us a little briefing on the status of the workshop this year?
Yeah. Well, okay. You know, over the past couple of days, there's been just a flood of registrations come in. So I can't give you an exact count of how many people I have registered, but I can tell you that as of last week, I had 78 people registered. So I'm guessing that number is closer to 100 today. And looking through my email, I can see that there are more in there that I need to get processed. For anyone who doesn't know what this is an annual meeting that we do every year. We bring together all of the EPA-funded grantees who have job training programs, and that means the ones that are currently working on EPA funds and the ones that have been funded in the past that may no longer be working with EPA funds but still have active job training programs. We bring all those people together along with all the EPA regional reps and several people from EPA headquarters to meet and discuss best practices, problems that you've had, and just discuss all the issues. Here in the past couple of years, the biggest issue is placement. So there are a lot of discussions on that. People will share ideas of what works, what doesn't, that type of thing. And all the grantees learn from each other and from EPA. So it's a great meeting, and all of the active PLC members are invited to attend. And I think that Mike has already sent that invitation out. Through our cooperative agreement with the EPA, we can pay lodging expenses for two nights. A couple of meals are also included. The rest of the expenses are up to the participants, and that includes PLC members as well as the funded grantees. So I don't know, Mike, do you want to add anything to that? Or
well,
Tim, I know you've been to this meeting in the past, and maybe you want to add something to that?
I went last year, was the first time I went. It was very informative and learned some things and kind of had some things reaffirmed that I was on the right track of doing things. But, you know, like you said, Glow, job placement is it's the number one heartache for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no magic answer.
Right. Now, particularly Millie and those of you who are interested in submitting for the next round, and I remember, Tim, you had asked me that those who did not get funded this year, there were 21. Usually there was about 10, but there were 110 applicants, so many people didn't get funded. We have always encouraged people to reapply because many of the applicants get it on the second or the third time around. And this is a reoccurring grant appropriation, of course, barring some whatever happens in Congress. But it's been funded every year, and we've had 10 grantees a year. This year, 21, and we had 13 AARRA grantees in addition. So it's a reoccurring program. And what happens is those people who don't get funded, we have suggested that they go to their regional rep and talk to them and ask them what they can do to increase their chances of getting funded in the next round and start to, we're going to have PLCs through this whole period when this starts again in terms of developing your ranking criteria and writing a winnable grant. And in terms of when that next round will be, we'll probably pin EPA down in August 22nd or 23rd, exactly when they expect the RFP to be out. I expect it'll be out in November. Probably they wanted to get onto a cycle like they had this last year, but this last year was delayed, so it could be November to January, somewhere in that time frame. So it won't be too late. It's not too late to too early to start planning on the next round again, because those will be announced in springtime again of next year. So we will be going along, and the earlier you get into this, just increases your chances. In terms of the amount of funding, I'm sure they don't even know, but as I had said previously, the advantage of bringing in other program offices in, it's not a large program by federal standards. So to the extent that this year it increased to $6 million, which is small for federal training programs. To the extent they could hold that funding or slightly increase it by bringing in more program offices, it'll be great. We could have another good round. So it is all dependent on appropriations and see how things go there.
Another thing, too, Mike, about the different programs and the different offices and departments that are getting involved, those people, representatives from each of those departments, the way I understand it, have been invited to the grantee meeting. And if that's the case, each one will give an update on their department, which would be helpful for everyone that attends.
Can I ask a question? This is Millie. I did not receive the email. When I talked to our regional rep with EPA, she suggested that we attend the meeting or the conference, but I've not received. And she said that
really?
You would be sending you could send us information, could you forward that email to me, please?
Yes. Now, did you get post-session notes for the last meeting, or did
No, I have not received.
Oh.
This is the first meeting. This is. I am green. I am
okay.
So new. It's not even funny.
You need to get us an email. If you could give it to us now, that would be helpful.
I can do that. I can do that. It's Millie, M-I-L-L-I-E, dot Hyatt, H-Y-A-T-T, at M-G-C-C-C, dot E-D-U.
Okay. I will be sending out post-session notes tomorrow, and attached to those post-session notes, I'll send an invite.
Fantastic.
And but one thing you need to do is respond to that invitation as soon as possible. Glo, do they have to do that hotel reservation independently of what they send to you?
The hotel reservation needs to be made by the participants themselves, and the deadline to do that was actually last Monday. We did get that extended to Friday this week. So when Mike sends those notes out, call and get registered immediately if you plan to attend. Because once that deadline passes, either you will be stuck with trying to find a hotel room in another location, or the price will go up. Now, we can only pay up to the amount that I've gotten for our group rate. If someone calls in late and gets a higher rate, then they have to make up that difference.
Understood.
Okay.
So we'll send that out to you immediately, and you could respond to that. And actually, it's a great opportunity for people that are thinking of resubmitting to sit down with people who have grants or have had grants. And we're going to have some alumni there, like Liam Tran from Boston, who worked for many years in this area, and people who have been grantees for 10 years, and people like Tim who have just come in and more recently. And we'll sit down and we go over all the issues, kind of what we're doing on the PLCs, going through all the issues in terms of job training and setting up a program. So,
very good. Thank you.
A couple questions about the grant.
Yes.
How soon will we be able to get some feedback from the different EPA officers about the grants that weren't accepted?
You should be able to get feedback right away. Your regional rep should have, right now, should have the information. Now, if you come to the meeting, you'll be able to pin them down because we'll be, you know, sitting in groups with our regional rep. And so it would be a really good opportunity to spend some time with that regional rep and discussing, you know, what issues that they may have had with your grant.
Would you suggest bringing the grant proposal that was submitted?
That would be a great idea.
Okay.
You could bring that along and sit down and kind of pin them down. The nice thing about this meeting is that the people who evaluate your grant do not include your grant rep in your region. They excuse themselves, but it's all the other reps. So they kind of sit out on review of yours, but then because of they have to recuse themselves because they might be more familiar with your program, they may consult with them, but then the other reps do evaluate your grant. And this does give us a chance to have all the reps in the room at the same time. And one of the things we may want to discuss at this workshop is what made the winning proposals. Why were they? And it would be interesting to have some of the EPA and the reps discuss what made the proposal strong. Because we're going to have also at this a lot of there will be a lot of grantees who will be re-upping. And when we go into this next round, I think it would be very useful for them to discuss with everyone while they can what made the winning proposals win and what differentiated them from those who may not have made the cut. So.
And my second question is going to be, it seemed like there might have been a concerted effort to give grants maybe to, you know, what, 21 grants were given and they represented 20 different states.
Right.
And I'm not sure if that could have been a coincidence or the concerted effort to make sure that the grants were spread out as much as possible.
you might be right. What the way the process works is supposedly the regional reps evaluate all the proposals. Then they submit the list to EPA, and the clincher is the assistant administrator has the final decision. And that's the kicker right there. And you brought up a good point. And we can ask them that point blank. Now, I do have to say that in the past, there hasn't been an equal distribution. There have been many times when the Northeast would, of course, they have many more brownfields, but they would get the lion's share of them. There have been times when Region 4, the Southeast, would get none. Your region often has been not very lucrative place in terms of grant proposal awards where there haven't been. And we've always thought that that would work in favor of, say, a Region 7 that doesn't have a lot of proposals, that there might be a little bit of favoritism towards the grants, but there hasn't been. So it's interesting that there was a distribution this time that isn't consistent with what's happened in the past. So, right. But it'll be interesting to talk to them.
And it seemed like, I think, out of the 21 that were granted, maybe four or five were repeats from the last couple of years. So, you know, again, and it's not sour grapes. It's just more,
right.
You know, to try to answer to the powers that be for me is, you know,
right.
A justification of why.
Why? That's exactly correct. And that's
all I'm being asked.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we need to – the nice thing about this workshop is that it is no holds barred. I mean, we have gotten into some very contentious discussions, and nothing is held against anyone or anything. And we bring up issues of like this, and we've had regional reps arguing among themselves about things, discussing issues. And you know, it's fair. This is fair game in terms of. And the way we'll do it is we could bring up those questions. So it isn't a particular grantee that may be concerned with, you know, them bringing up an issue that might be critical of the agency. I have no problem in bringing these up in our plenary discussions, very frank questions like this. How are they awarded? Is there a regional preference? We've brought up issues like this in the past. We brought up very strong issues about the size of the grants being too small or the duration of the grants being too short and those types of things. And that's what this is for. And it also provides feedback to EPA, because they really want to do the right thing. We'll find that out. I think that's a very good point. So go from there. Well, let's spend a little time, and this week and next week we're going to talk about this whole issue of curriculum, which does tie into this. There's really four issues here. It's basically, what should I teach? How do I teach it? Where do I get my certified trainers to teach it? And then we've got a bunch of training issues that we're going to talk about. Of course, the big question is, what should I teach? And I know, Tim, you've wrestled with this. It's been changing in the agency of what they're looking for in terms of funding grantees. Early on, they required grantees to have innovative technologies in their curriculum because it was as part of the legislation that got them their money. That is not so important anymore. Now we've got other media. It used to be brownfields, strictly brownfields job training, and the criteria was you had to have a brownfield in your community, and the jobs had to be oriented strictly towards that brownfields activity. Now, as we bringing in, particularly this year, there's been a lot of talk about urban gardening, and we've had a lot of discussion on urban gardening. In fact, I attended a webinar, which we talked about in post-session notes, that was put on about urban gardening. They're very interested in perhaps training programs that will train urban gardeners, because again, they're coming in as part of the groove. There's issues about solid waste There's issues about water. And of course, we talked earlier about wastewater and how that might fit in. So the issue here is matching a curriculum to labor market assessment. And of course, those of you who have been on these calls, I talk pretty much, we've dominated most of our discussions about labor market assessments and how important they are. But really, in this labor market, they even become more important because you've got to set up your training program to match the jobs that are going to be out there when these students graduate. And that all goes back to the labor market assessment and learning how to find out what jobs might be in the community. And they may be very obscure jobs. In Florida, for example, maybe 8 years ago or so, there weren't a lot of environmental jobs as we would think of it in terms of sampling streams and things, but it turned out that the highway department had a huge demand for horticultural workers. And they were able to set up a program that generated horticultural workers. It wouldn't be something that you would normally go out and set up a curriculum for, but they had done a good labor market assessment. Same thing happened in East Palo Alto, where they did a labor market assessment, and it was humming along, but all of a sudden they came across a tank manufacturer in East Palo Alto who basically said, I will hire all of your graduates, or I'll give them a chance to work for us if they have these specific certifications and this training. And it was things like confined space and, of course, HAZWOP and those types of things. They developed their curriculum almost as a feeder to the tank manufacturer, and they were able to provide employment to that manufacturer. Now, slowly that program evolved into different areas, but these are some examples where communities were able to do a general labor market assessment, but also were able to find some pockets of very strong demand. I had an email today, actually, from Joe at EPA, and they had a citizen inquiry that was very concerned about, and I don't know, Tim, if you have this issue, program labor agreements. They're called program PLAs or project labor agreements, and these are agreements that are made by big developers, Trump developing an entire community, or a BART system in California would be an example, a dam project, a very large multi-year, maybe billion-dollar, like the tunnel in Boston, very large programs. And what developers would like to do is they'd like to secure a labor pool with no strikes, with negotiated settlements, usually 3 to 5 years. And they form what they call PLAs, and they're allowed to do this with labor unions, and they'll get all the construction trades together, and they'll form an agreement before they start the project. Well, it gives the developer a stable source of labor at a stable price with no strike provisions and all of that. The downside of this, and it also includes some social justice and hiring local, but the downside is you have to hire union because it's all through all the employees come through union offices. Well, if you're in the Northeast or in a strong union area, maybe some in St. Louis in a very large project, you're basically excluding all your independent contractors and all the non-union people. And this person was extremely concerned that PLAs are basically negating and making it very difficult for them to place their graduates because they were non-union and would not go into these feeder projects. And, of course, how do we respond to this? And PLAs are not going to go away. They're being diminished. I think President Bush signed an order that said if it's financed by the federal government, you cannot have a PLA. And labor, or organized labor, is decreasing in terms of its emphasis on a national basis. It's very strong in Northeast and in urban areas. But one of our suggestions to this citizen who is very concerned, we said, you know, PLAs probably won't go away. And many of our grantees do work with unions, and they actually, in their labor market assessment, they may find that their program might become a feeder for the union, so that their workers would actually go into the union and then go into jobs. And company training places like out east in Oakland, Mandela Training Center, are actually union feeders. But even if you're not feeding your graduates into the union, you could still, in your labor market assessment, determine which companies that are independent are getting maybe not the massive jobs, but smaller jobs. There are still many non-union independent shops, or even union shops that may have a mix and may not be participating in a PLA. And what I'm trying to say is, when you decide your curriculum, this labor market assessment is so important to determine what you're going to teach. These are going to be the certification courses that you're going to offer. And if the PLA is taking all of the people that have certain certifications in a certain construction field, this is usually applies only to the construction trades, you may not want to go there. You may not want to send your curriculum in that direction. You might send your curriculum into sampling and analysis, or doing more environmental rather than construction trades types of environmental training. So you may focus your program so that your graduates be going more into an environmental firms, which would not be construction trades and wouldn't be subject to requiring union membership if the union is not hiring or if you're not feeding the union. So it's so important to see what's in your community. Now, one thing, and for Millie in particular, as you, the RFP, the request for proposal that'll come out for this next year, will more than likely be very similar to the one that came out last year. So they don't change it that much. There may be some more EPA people joining the fold, but one of the things that they did say is there are certain mandatory courses that, I don't care what your labor market assessment says, they want you to teach this. And that's primarily the HAZWOPR course. It's OSHA 29 CFR 1910-120. And to explain that briefly, what happens is all of the agencies publish in the Federal Register all their requirements, and particularly in training, they publish their training requirements. So when OSHA puts their requirements out, it's all printed in the Federal Register. And the way the Federal Register is organized is all the 29 CFRs, Code of Federal Registers, are OSHA training, OSHA requirements. So 29 CFR refers to OSHA. EPA has its own CFR. DOT is 49 CFR. So 29 CFR is OSHA. And then 1910-120 is the hazardous waste operations. And in that, if you go to that document on the web or whatever, you will see all of the training requirements that are required for hazardous waste operations and emergency response. And that is a required course. If you're going to go on a site that has hazardous materials, you have to have what they call HAZWOPR, or this what is formally referred to as OSHA 29 CFR 1910-120. It's a 40-hour course. If you were to go to an independent training contractor, they would charge you about $550 for that course.
That would be very cheap.
Yes, it could, and it goes up from there, right, Glo?
Yeah. Oh yeah, big time.
You have to have that if you're going to have an EPA training program.
Mm-hmm.
After that, everything is negotiable in terms of your labor market assessment. They do want you to, there is a whole list which we'll put in the post-session notes of things they want you to include in your training. But these can be anywhere from awareness to actual certifications. Now, not every course is certified, but particularly the OSHA courses, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, has a whole list of courses, and they all have many of them have certifications. Many people, for example, give the 10-hour general construction course. It's a 29 CFR 1926 That's a course, or a 30-hour general construction course. Many will have a confined space entry. If you're working on a tank or have to go into a trench, any place where you're in a confined space, you would have to have a confined space certification. Tim, do you all do any of the OSHA training?
Yeah, all the ones that you just mentioned.
Yeah, 30. Those are very common. HAZWOPR, 10-hour general construction, 30-hour general construction, confined space. There's a whole lot of other ones, fall and arrest systems, electrical safety. Those might come into play if you're doing training for solar installation, that type of thing. If you're working in on even HVAC and you might be in confined spaces, you may also have to have confined space. So during your labor market assessment, you're going to be finding out if those graduates of yours might need this type of training. EPA would like also, because it's an EPA-sponsored course, they would like to take you to take courses that are EPA courses. And the primary EPA course is, we call it RRMP. It's lead renovation, repair, and painting. It's a course that's set up by EPA. You have to be certified to teach that, and it's required whenever in areas where there may be lead in buildings that you may be painting or renovating. Same goes for asbestos, mold, radon, freon extraction from white goods. These are EPA types of courses that you may want to include in your curriculum. Some of these have to do with construction trades and some don't. And then there's a whole bunch of courses that are not EPA or OSHA related, things like first aid training, CDL, commercial driver's license training. There might be DOT regulations. It might be DOT hazardous transportation, which is a certified course. It might be forklift operators. There are a host of courses. EPA would also like you to have some sort of course in green technology, because now, of course, because of urban gardening and some of these other green technologies coming in, they'd like you to teach those types of courses. So there clearly will be too many courses to teach in your program. And so the real trick is limiting it down. And I guess those of you who have been through this, Jackie, how did you end up limiting your courses down?
We had this in place from the city of Tulare. We had gotten a peer group of industrial corporations here in town that would let us know what trainings would be best to fit their internship programs. And so what all of them had in common were the classes we decided to have in the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, but now I'm not sure if you remember, in one of our previous conversations, we're going to dive into a labor market assessment in a comprehensive manner, more so than what we've had before. Before it was just a discussion and an invitation to some of the corporations here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're thinking of to try different nooks and crannies of different industries that may call for other types of training or certification that we can switch some of the classes and trainings in hopes that they would assist in the job development component.
One thing about this is your curriculum is going to be very dynamic, and it'll change from cycle to cycle. And it is highly dependent on your employers. And if you can get an employer on your advisory board who's willing to interview, or several employers who are interested in interviewing the people you're graduating, you really want to be flexible enough to train to their requirements. I know I went to the graduation of Durham Tech graduates here in North Carolina, and on this advisory board, and they were all there, These were air sampling companies, and the reason, and there were two of them, and a third one that was associated with them who did work in a consulting firm, and they were all air-oriented, and it was interesting because the Durham Tech was very much aware of these companies, and they were on their advisory board, so they can kind of slant their curriculum to make sure that their graduates were well-received by these particular companies. The nice thing about our program is that we're not graduating huge numbers of people. So if you're taking a population base of several hundred thousand in your community, we're talking just a few people. So you don't necessarily have to train for the masses. You can really train for very specific. And that's where exactly what you're talking about in terms of doing a very targeted labor market assessment to try to pick out those pockets that will, you know, you can place your graduates in. It'll make your job a whole lot easier to do that. Well, one of the things about this is we do limit these calls to 30 minutes, and we're going to continue the discussion that on these other points I talked about is how you teach it, where do you get certified trainers, and then the whole issue of training issues like health issues, health and safety, insurance and liability, and that type of thing. And we're going to talk about those things on the 10th of August, which will be 2 weeks from today. So with that, what I'm going to do is send everyone some post-session notes. I will get those out right away. So Millie and anyone else who may not have gotten to sign up for the annual grantee meeting can get that going and send to GLOW their registration. So we'll get them there, and I hope to certainly.
Can I ask a question?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
With Millie again, what's the date of this thing?
Oh, GLOW?
August 22nd and 23rd. It's a Monday, Tuesday.
Very good.
And
thank
on Monday,
you.
Monday we actually begin in the evening. We don't start until 6 o'clock p.m. So that gives everyone a chance to be able to travel that same day and not have
okay.
to take an extra day off of work. So we go from 6 to 8:30, I believe it is, on Monday night. And then Tuesday is a very long day. We start at 8 o'clock, and we won't get done until 7 o'clock that night. But there again, it's so that so that you can stay over on Tuesday night and then have all day Wednesday for your travel arrangements back home.
Very
so it's a long day, but we have
Alexandria?
Found that it works best that way.
And it's in Alexandria?
Yes.
Alexandria, Virginia. Some people take the next morning and tour around in the morning and take an afternoon flight home or just get
right,
out in the
right.
morning, whatever works for them.
Yep. I just want to put it on my calendar.
Great.
Be sure to send that registration in, though, as soon as Mike gets that out.
Fantastic.
We'll get this out to you right away this evening. You'll probably get it tomorrow. So good.
That'd be awesome.
That
actually, I get emails on my phone, so I'll see it tonight if you send it
great.
Out this evening.
Okay. Okay, well, you all have a good week, and we'll see you on this PLC line on the 10th of August.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you for coming.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.